Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to the Top Order podcast. This week in cricket, coming to you. That's Raj's iPad falling over in the background. It is a phone stand after all. ICC World Test Championship final. The sixth day is going to come into force. We've also got the BCCI deciding that they want to continue with the IPL and how that's going to unpick with the Caribbean Premier League and a whole host of international cricket going on at the same time. We talked the Black Caps warm-up game and folks' socks as well, as well as a little bit of South Africa, West Indies. All coming up on the Top Order podcast. Stay tuned. So the playing conditions for the World Test Championship final have come out, answered some of our questions from the previous week. So the Duke's Grade A cricket ball will be the weapon of choice for Wagner, Bolt, Southee and co. as we move into that, as well as a sixth day if required as well. So hopefully meaning we're going to get a result in that and not have the situation where the trophy is shared between India and New Zealand, which would happen in the event of a draw. What do we think about, I guess, those two things, the ball and then the sixth day, fellas?
Well, I think that we sort of knew all of that other stuff. I think the sixth day, you know, we've been talking about playing with the Duke's ball. I mean, the teams must have known this for a long time. They've been talking about how they've been training with the Duke's for ages and ages and ages. But that sixth day is the, I guess, the surprising thing. And I wonder if we'll start seeing that come into force in Test cricket in general, because it seems like a good option, really, when you think about it and all the delays. I suppose Tests these days don't actually normally go to the fifth day the way that cricket's going. But, you know, if you want to get results and ensure that you get them, then having an extra day seems like a good idea to me.
Yeah, it's only to make up for time lost to weather that doesn't get made up over the course of that day or the next couple of days in the test match. So it's not for bad. It doesn't look like it's for bad light here. So it says,
no, it, will
it
be
does
for
say
bad
lost
light.
Time.
Yeah, it will oh, be yeah, for okay. bad light as well.
So they give an example of rain, but it probably will be for bad light, but not for slow over
rate. It says something about it being decided on the afternoon of the fifth day. Like, what does that actually mean?
Well, I think the reason for that is because of the first part of the regulation, which is it'll only kick in if there's time lost during regulation play that's not made up. They're only going to know whether that's the case on the fifth and final day as to whether they can make those overs up. To Bordy's point, if it's weather, then obviously, yes, that might happen. Light, I don't think, is actually going to be an issue in England at that time of the year because you're playing in almost the longest part of the UK summer. We have a pretty decent extended daylight, floodlights at the ground as well. Very rarely do you not get your overs in due to light now in England. It will just be a weather conversation, I think.
Early starts as well, I think. I think that's the start time is 10:30. I think that just suits the New Zealand and Indian audiences better, which is it's great for us. Obviously, here in New Zealand, we can kind of get through that first session, 9:30 to 11:30, pretty nicely and then kind of decide if you want to really kick in and do an all-nighter or just...
Or you want to get up for work in the morning.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be a few tough days over the next 3 weeks, I think, for us Black Caps fans.
So the ball is the same ball they usually use in Test cricket?
Yeah, so it is the same same ball, the Duke's cricket ball. And I'd imagine the seamers from both sides will be licking their lips with that prospect. As well as Virat Kohli and Ashwin have given it the thumbs up as well. Okay, next topic, we're going to move on. So the BCCI, again, make a unilateral decision that they are going to conduct the remainder of the IPL 2021 with players or not, by the sounds of it, with Caribbean Premier League clashing their own Indian team as well. Going to be in a bit of a rush to get back from a hurdle perspective. Their England 5-match series is scheduled to end on September the 14th. So they're going to need to hot-foot it back for the start of the revision or the revised start of the IPL. What do we think about this? It just seems like a little bit of a unilateral decision and haven't actually thought through all the ramifications and certainly haven't got a resolution on whether or not the Caribbean Premier League are happy to move proceedings or make some, concessions. And the same with their own players as well.
Well, I think that's going to be the biggest challenge is for the Indian players who are playing in their England Test Series, marquee Test Series, 5 tests in England, finishes ostensibly on September the 14th. They've then got to get from England to the UAE in time for, September 18th? I believe.
18th, 20th. But their plan for that is to just go from a bubble to a bubble, so there won't be any real quarantine required.
Right, okay. And for the people playing in the Caribbean Premier League, they're going to have to go from the Caribbean all the way across to the UAE, and presumably they will have to go through public airports and therefore would be subject to quarantine, you would think.
They'll have to isolate that. So that's prompted the BCCI to request that the CPL start 10 days earlier or so that can finish a bit earlier.
Right.
Give them enough time to quarantine for 7 days, I think it is, before the start of the IPL or the resumption of the IPL. That would actually mean that the CPL would start before the end of the West Indies home summer.
Mm.
So there'll still be the 2020s going on with Pakistan, I believe, is the last series.
Mm.
So that would put the West Indies out. So I don't know if they'll be doing that. But
yeah. Lippy, go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, nothing's really changed from my views. I mean, the BCCI has obviously just decided, look, we're going to go ahead with this. It's worth too much money. And almost like you say, whether the players come or not, because I think we're going to see more than ever, some players are just going to go, this is just not going to work for me. Mm. And, you know, whether it becomes a tournament where there's half the overseas players don't go, or whether it means someone like Fennellan gets a crack at RCB, or, you know, we're thinking about all the overseas players, but they do have 8 overseas players and they can only play 4 at a time. So, you know, maybe it just means we are going to get to see some fresh faces, overseas players that actually get an opportunity, whereas otherwise they might not have. I know that probably takes away from the tournament a little bit, but in a way, you know, maybe it adds a bit of interest as well.
Do we think that that's what's going to happen, that you'll end up with a whole bunch of players showing up 2 or 3 games into the tournament? You might have Fennellan and McLennigan and those kind of players feature early on in the resumption, and then the other guys come in a bit later on, because you're backing on to the World Cup for T20s that's likely now, you would think, to be in the UAE starting, October 20th, October something 16th, like that?
Yeah, 18th. They haven't actually kind of admitted that to themselves, India, yet, I don't think. It seems like they're still trying to play it at home, but you can't, I mean, surely not after this.
I think so now, after this announcement.
I just wonder whether this is all about the cash, that the minute they say, nah, it's not going to go ahead, they've got to start giving some money back potentially to the broadcaster or to sponsors. So the longer they can say, we are going to carry this on, they've got a way or a slight chance that they might be able to get it on. There's a lot of water to go under a lot of bridges before we get to this point. But worth noting that in England, where India are obviously going to play, England have just announced their highest case numbers in a long, long time, a spike with the Indian variant. They've got up to 4,000 cases. They were sitting at about 2,000 a day in the weeks prior. I also think that some of the players are going to be a little bit gun-shy to actually get over even to the UAE. You know, you've seen some of these guys that have had a long and arduous route. Tim Seifert's spoken out this week about, you know, he was left stranded. No, and look, no sense of impropriety. He was well looked after by his franchise, but said very lonely to be kind of left there for that period of time when, you know, all of his countrymen had obviously flown out and managed to get either to the Maldives or home. I just wonder whether the players are going to put themselves in that level of uncertainty, particularly then knowing that the World Cup might take place as well. So I just wonder whether this is just a cash conversation and they don't want to admit that they're not going to be able to hold either tournament, really.
I do have two or three points to make. First one I want to make is on the players you're talking about. So England, I think, have basically come out and said, we're not going to send our players to the IPL ahead of that. It's too much. They need a break before they go into the World 2020, if that in fact goes ahead. There's also talk that Pat Cummins and David Warner won't be going as well. So that list is sort of growing as we're talking about. And I guess that's what we're looking for, is the players to vote with their feet. If they have the option to play it, India tick that box and getting that game, the game's done. They need that revenue generated. So moving now to the T20 World Cup. India at that general special meeting where they...
Virtual special meeting.
Where they decided to... you know, restart the IPL. They also asked for a bit more time on where they're going to decide where the World 2020 will be. I found it interesting. There was a couple of reasons that this has been delayed. I don't know if you guys saw the article, but they're talking about, one, there's actually a tax exemption for the World Cup from the ICC, from the Indian government, which is actually around, you know, $120, $125 million.
Substantial.
That's a massive sort of exemption there. There's a lot of obviously regulations and government stuff that needs to be worked through from that perspective. But also, the country is actually redlisted and they can't go through and do a lot of their checking of pitches and facilities and how that is actually in India at the moment. So the more and more this builds up, it's looking less and less likely that the games will be played in India at all. They also talked about the likelihood of a third wave popping up as well. Thoughts on that, World 2020?
Oh, look, I mean, I think to me that the fact that the IPL is in UAE, I think that's just the signal that eventually we'll get there. I mean, it's tough for the BCCI to admit that. I think that's the tricky thing. And like you said, it's just, you know, we can sit here around this table and say, oh, it's all about money, but that's a pretty significant amount of money. And you can absolutely see why, as much as I think it's ridiculous, you can absolutely see why that happens, because it is such a staggering number.
So if we are to move to Dubai or UAE, have you guys figured out the problem there? There's a problem staring everyone in the face. And that problem is that if they're going to play in those three venues, they're going to have to play 76 matches across that month and a half period at those three venues, unless they open some more up, which I don't know if they can do. So you'd want to bring a spinner or two, I think.
And you're also playing multiple games every day to fit 76 games into 20 days in three grounds.
Yeah, so that's with the IPL and the...
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm not sure on the facilities. I know in Dubai there's a ground outside the ground that's almost the same specifications. Obviously, it doesn't have a stand around it. So if you've not got fans there, you presumably could actually set up TV cameras and have, you know, a game going on. Recreating that sort of venue feel might be a little bit difficult. It feels to me, though, that for me, the integrity of the tournament's got to be the thing here. So the ICC surely need to step in and have a word and say, look, we need to do quite a lot of work to get this on in the United Arab Emirates. We've got some alternatives, potentially, for us to be able to look at that as well. You know, the timing that this is coming, I'm pretty sure New Zealand would be keen to host it at the start of our summer here, and could actually put on a pretty decent tournament. I'm sure Australia may say the same thing as well, if you know, this Melbourne outbreak notwithstanding. So I just wonder what conversations are going on at that boardroom table at the ICC, and really whether or not they've actually got any teeth to really enact any change.
As far as grounds are concerned, though, like the grounds that we had for the IPL at the end of last year, they were really good. Like, there was some really good quality cricket played on those grounds. So as far as the logistics of the hotels, and I mean, sure, there were only eight teams at that tournament and there'll be more in the World T20, but in terms of the way that tournament was organised and run by the, you know, ostensibly it was, you know, Indian teams plus the UAE cricket people putting that together. But that actually ran really, really well. So if they can replicate that and have some success in hosting the remainder of the IPL, I feel really reasonably confident that the UAE could put on a good tournament because it has reasonable cricket grounds, good cricket grounds, and there's so many hotels that they'll be able to find enough, you know, suitable venues, you would think, for all the teams. The travel between the venues and the logistics of who plays where and when is going to be really interesting from a playing perspective, because you might end up with not quite back-to-backs, but two games in 3 or 4 days at a particular venue to try and get everything in
well,
in,
and that was one of the criticisms, wasn't it, of that IPL, was that I think it was a pretty lengthy bus trip to get to one of the grounds and the centres that they were staying at.
Yeah, look, I think that's probably enough speculating for now. Let's move on to some cricket that's actually just around the corner, which is super exciting for all of us around the table. Do we want to talk the New Zealand warm-up game or Slippery Sox first, Binksy?
Yeah, well, Slippery Sox. Ben Folkes is apparently, look, I don't know the full details of it, but slid on his socks in the changing room at the Oval, pulled a hamstring and is out for 3 months. So real cruel luck for him. Has led to England drafting Sam Billings into the squad as wicket-keeping cover, although looks fairly likely that James Bracey will probably drop down the order from where he might have batted if he'd have made his debut, potentially up the order. He bats three for his county side, Gloucestershire. And look, potentially...
Did they bring in Hamid as well?
Yeah, so they brought in Hamid as batting cover. So he's had a really, really good start to the season, couple of hundreds and 90-odd, and a couple of other scores as well. For Notts, who hadn't won a county championship game since, I think, 2018, and they've now won three on the bounce this year. So, look, that's, for me, really good because he's looked very, very good on the highlights packages that I've seen. And obviously, most batters look good on the highlights package when they're scoring runs. But no, he's turned from a boy into a man. You know, he's got a bit of strength. Looks to have kind of really, really worked hard on his game under Peter Moores, who was the England coach when he came into the Test side in India in 2016 as well.
I was reading a little bit about him actually, and they're talking about where is he at now?
Is it Nottinghamshire?
And they've talked about the conditions that they've put him into, given him some responsibility. It's sort of seen him return back to how he was when he first came onto the scene. Do you think that could be a rod for his own back if he's going into a bit of an unknown environment where, you know, that's how he struggled earlier when he was at, where was it before? Sorry? Or
no, so he was at Lancashire before. Look, I don't know a massive amount about all the whys and wherefores, but his dad was a massive influence on his game and actually was his, you know, his coach. At times, actually preferring to work with his dad rather than coaches that were in the Lancashire and England setup. So I think moving and making that break to a new county, albeit under Peter Moores, who was England coach, then actually went to Lancashire as coach before he went back and coached England again, and now is at Nottinghamshire. So yeah, quick biography of Peter Moores there as well. But look, I think Hamid, it's been helped that he's gone to another major ground, a test playing ground, and a county where there is a little bit of pace in that wicket at Trent Bridge. And look, I think that, you know, that's done really, really wonders for his game. I think let's not forget as well, he was in great form when he unfortunately broke his finger, and then, you know, that ended his little international run. He didn't actually then come back into the side. He went back into county cricket, struggled, lost his contract, and now has seen a little bit of a resurgence. The thing that really puzzles me about this, though, is they've brought Sam Billings into the squad, who was at the IPL with the Delhi Capitals, I think, for the tournament, having made an edict as the selection panel that they weren't going to pick anyone that was at the IPL. Johnny Bairstow must be sitting at home going, hold on a second, I've gone from losing the gloves a couple of years ago to be behind Joss Butler, then to be behind Ben Folkes. Now I'm behind Joss Butler, Ben Folkes, James Bracey and Sam Billings. When he said he really wants to get that, if there was a like-for-like opportunity for Butler not playing, I think he's got to feel pretty hard done by that he's not got the you know, would you fancy maybe a Red Bull game for Yorkshire and then a couple of test matches whilst we give Joss a little rest? And I think he just said, absolutely, please. I'll bat at 7. If I get 100, then pressure's on you, selectors, as we move into that India series and the Ashes coming up in December 2021, even.
And I guess moving to the New Zealand stuff, I don't know really that the warm-up game that they've played, 2 days kind of into squad game, I don't know that it's really changed a lot. We've seen 50s for Daryl Mitchell, Ratcher and Ravindra. We've had Devin Conway, Colin de Grandhomme, Doug Bracewell all score 50s. A lot of bowlers chipped in with a couple of wickets. It sort of felt like a warm-up game, which is exactly what it was, and I don't think it's really changed anything in terms of what we're going to see in Test 1.
I've got two questions for you, New Zealand guys. Devin Conway opened the batting, looked pretty comfortable. Does he now get the first billing officially? Is he now it?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
No disagreement, no sneaky Will Young theories?
Oh, I think that he will open the batting. I don't think that he should open the batting. I know we've had this discussion earlier, but it's one of those situations where you pick your best batsman and you fit them in the side.
Yep. So who would open the batting for you?
For me, I think that opening the batting is a specialist position. I don't know if we have selected that way. Will Young is probably the best fit for that, but I think that Conway deserves a shot just in the form that he's in currently.
Mm-hmm. And de Grandhomme and Mitchell both made runs by the sound of it from what you were saying, Stuart. Does that give you any more clarity from what you've seen of those two performances as to who you would prefer to have in the side?
Yeah, I think we talked about this last week and how I would prefer probably to have Mitchell in the side, just more on that he's in possession of the jersey and I think he did enough to keep it. But I don't know, the reading the tea leaves, I wonder if, you know, Colin de Grandhomme's ability with the ball and seeing the pictures of the pitch, it certainly doesn't look like it will take much spin on the early days. So, you know, Mitchell Santner scored a few runs in that game. As we mentioned last week, there's a chance that if they go with a spinner, it would be someone like Ratchan Ravindra who would lengthen the batting lineup and bat 7 and bowl spin. But, yeah, I feel like if they think de Grandhomme is fit enough, maybe they go with him. But it's, you know, I actually think we've got so much talent that's almost about the same ability in what they've done in the last couple of years that we probably can't go too wrong, if that makes sense.
Is there any chance they both play?
Well, I suppose that could happen, but certainly in this first test, that would mean they would be leaving out a seamer. So Matt Henry or Doug Bracewell or someone like that doesn't get to play. I mean, Bracewell getting 50, maybe that bumps him up ahead of Henry. There are a few questions, but I think in reality, the main questions around this side, once Bolt comes back, they've almost been answered in that Conway has just been in such supreme form. The only way I think anything changes for the World Test Championship is if they decide that someone's really struggling or someone gets injured or something before that time. I think as much as they would say, we haven't penciled in our 11 for that side. I think they just about have.
You've got to keep it simple in this situation. Pick the players who you know should be there. We don't need to do anything special here.
Binksy, I've got a question for you before we wrap up the England-New Zealand segment. You've seen a lot of the county championship in terms of highlights and streaming and so forth over the last couple of weeks. In your mind, have England got any closer to what their ideal first 11 would be for that test match? You know, Ollie Robinson, Stone, Overton, all putting their hand up. Who do you think has got the front running there?
Yeah, so for me, I think Ollie Robinson comes in and plays. If I'm reading England's tea leaves correctly. So, yeah, for me, I think as long as Sibley's fit, I think they will go with him because I think they've tried to put that top three together with the Ashes in mind. So I think that, you know, they go Burns, Sibley, Crawley, Root. Obviously Stokes will come back in at 5. I think Pope actually probably might move up to 5 in this lineup to accommodate your man Lawrence at 6. And then Bracey at 7, or you could bat those guys either way around really. And then Robinson comes in at 8. I wonder, like you guys, whether we play a spinner or whether we go with that seam attack. Most of the pundits seem to think we'll play either Wood or Stone. I'm not so sure that you necessarily need that pace on a, what will be a sluggish wicket, I think, still a slow wicket. So yeah, that'd be the only only potential selection dilemma for England is whether they go spinner or speedster.
Do you think there's more significance to that speedster after, you know, Jofra Archer's had his surgery? I think, you know, there was talk that if he has to miss the India series to make sure he plays the 2020 World Cup and then the Ashes in Australia, that he would miss that series. Do you think is there any spotlight there on the bowlers because of that?
Yeah, look, I think as long as he recovers from this elbow injury, which by all accounts they're pretty confident that he will, I think Wood, Archer and Stone are on the plane to Australia, and I can't see them playing all three of those together or even two of those guys together. I've said it a number of times, I wouldn't want to knock on either Brodie or Anderson's door and tell them they're not playing. Anderson in what would be an Alistair Cook 161 test appearances.
It's just staggering, isn't
record.
It? Unbelievable for a fast bowler. I know we gave him a big rap 6 months ago or whenever he kind of broke some sort of giant record. He just keeps breaking them. But yeah, it's staggering, that longevity.
Yeah. So look, I think they will play a speedster because that's been the formula that they've gone with. So that to me then says that it's a shootout and you might need to leave someone out. Let's move on though. We've talked a hell of a lot about potential selections for this series over the course of the last two or three weeks, and a pair of socks helping us to get it into the agenda again today. South Africa, West Indies, two tests and T20s coming up as well, Raj, which piqued your interest this week.
Yeah, Raj wanted to talk about it a bit because I think these are two teams that are sort of on the precipice of one falling in and one rising out of the Mount Doom. So with South Africa, you've got them coming into it at ranked 7, ranked lower than the West Indies, who are currently ranked 6th. They've been playing some cricket that's probably not of the highest quality lately. Their last series was against the Pakistanis, and they lost 2-0, I think it was, in January of this year. You look at their lineup, and I'll go through their lineup because they're not necessarily household names. But the last 11 that played was Dean Elgar, Aidan Markram, who had a really good series, 200 runs against Pakistan. Got Russie van der Dussen. You had Faf du Plessis, who's now retired, so that's a spot open. Bavuma, de Kock, Mulder, Lindy in that sort of all rounder position. Then you've got Maharaj, Rabada, and Nokia. They have taken 4 spinners to this tour as well, which gives you a kind of indication that they will be, or they're expecting it to be dry and spinning. But the real stat that piqued my interest for the South Africans is that since December 2019, I believe, they've only scored 300s as a test playing nation, and the only team lower than them is Afghanistan, and they've played significantly less tests. So that's 300s for South Africa in 8 test matches, which is a problem. It is a real problem. And then just shining the spotlight a little bit on the West Indies. So we know that there's a bit of conjecture around the contract situation at the moment, what's happening. You've got a team that's starting to build some momentum. They had a great series win against Sri Lanka and then Bangladesh. The series before that, the Sri Lanka one was a draw, but they played some good cricket. I just see them sort of coming back into relevance in terms of world cricket, test cricket being some kind of superpower. When is the last time you would have seen West Indies going into a test series against Sri Lanka, if not even Stevens, probably the favourite to win it? Thoughts?
I think the South African is going to be a case of who can we find that can play. West Indies are going to have the opposite problem. They're going to have all of these players who will be vying for spots, and the competition for spots in the West Indian batting lineup, which for years has been who can we find that we can get to play. There's massive competition for spots. You've got Meyer, you've got Bonner, you've got Puran, you've got Hetmeyer with a point to prove. You've got all these guys now all of a sudden in the middle order. Roston Chase is in there as well.
You've got Brooks, you've got De Silva.
Of these guys, right, that you're going to have to find to fit in that top 6 for the West Indies. It's a fantastic problem for them to have all of a sudden. And if one or two of them can fire, I think they can put South Africa to the sword. Because to your point, Raj, Where are they going to get runs from in that lineup? They know that they're going to have Elgar, who's stable. Markram had a good series against Pakistan, but we haven't quite seen him perform to the level that I think he's capable of. I think he could be quite a good test match cricketer, Aidan Markram. But then for the rest of the side, it is really a question of when are those guys going to step up and make big hundreds. Temba Bavuma is one of the guys that they'll be looking to do that.
Well, we talked about it when we talked about the change in captaincy after de Kock threw the toys out of the pram. And I think you've got a situation where I think we went through and we couldn't find almost a single lock for even selection, let alone the captaincy. Mm. And as you say, West Indies with the opposite problem. I think it's brilliant. I really want to see a resurgence in West Indies cricket. You know, they've not been a power since, the late 80s, very early 90s now. Mm. So, look, I really, really hope that they can get that group of young players and young batsmen onto the park for a period of time and hopefully that resurgence, because it's great to watch them when they're in full flow.
Yeah, and then they've gone back down the old route of having a trial. They've assembled 30 players and a four-day match is about to kick off tonight, I believe, our time, Monday night. So that'll be interesting to watch.
Fantastic for world cricket for the West Indies to be back, because one, it's a great place for teams to tour. It's a great place for us to watch cricket as well as fans. So let's hope that there's some real competitive cricket played in that series and the West Indies are on the way up.
Well, that's awesome, Baldy, and wraps up this very, very short This Week in Cricket. This week we've got a couple of interviews coming up in the feed as well. Ken Rutherford and Ian O'Brien that we've just recorded this evening, which both of which are fantastic listens. So watch out for those in your feed. We'll be also back with plenty more news, views and interviews across the world of cricket in the coming week. So stay tuned in the feed for that. Also keep an eye on our social feeds. We've got some exciting news coming up on the social feeds over the course of the next couple of weeks or so. If you're well inclined, you're going to be able to get pictures of our ugly mugs on some Top Order podcast merchandise in the coming weeks. So keep an eye out for that. I'm sure you'll all be waiting with bated breath.
Not as excited as Binksy is. He's fizzing. Absolutely fizzing.
Who wouldn't want me on their coffee mug? You know? But look, I think that's a good time to leave the podcast here on Possibles versus Probables on our merchandise lineup. But stay tuned, www.thetopwaterpodcast.com if you want to find all the details. But that's it from all of us here this evening in a rainy Auckland. Good night and God bless, and we'll see you next week. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.